Chapter 3, Blood and Fire. What's done is done, White Claw, even I said as the bears sat in a prison cell below the courtroom with their backs turned to each other. You can't be mad at me forever. The King's Guard had arrested both of them immediately after even I had challenged the King. They didn't know where the boy had been taken, but they knew he would not be harmed until after the ritual had been completed. You should have told me what you meant to do if the King refused you, White Claw grumbled. I had the right to know. You would have tried to stop me, even I said. You're damn right I would have tried to stop you. White Claw turned around to face even I's back. Challenge the King? You are a fool, even I. I should have reported that child myself. You have ruined me, you have ruined your wife, and you have sentenced yourself to death. Even I did not turn to face White Claw. But he spoke calmly and clearly. I will complete the challenges, my friend. I will not fail. White Claw huffed and whirled away from Even Eye to stare at the wall. Even Eye had spoken the words of fate and challenged the King, and Law said Even Eye was now subject to challenges of his own. The reward for completing all three challenges was possession of the kingdom, but the penalty for failure was death. Long ago, the Elder Bears had written this law so the Bears of the Kingdom could choose a champion among them to challenge and dethrone a king that had become a tyrant. But the challenges were very difficult, as to deter anyone who might seek the throne for unjust reasons. In the history of the Bears, only one new king had been crowned by this method, the warrior king, Black Maw. He was a champion of the people, and they begged him to challenge the tyrant Bloodpaw. It had happened a long time ago, and was one of the events enshrined on the ceiling of the main tunnel. No bear that lived today had been alive to witness it. The ritual consisted of three challenges. The first challenge was of the mind, the second challenge was physical, and the third, if one made it that far, was a duel against the king. The duel was fought to the death. Even I and White Claw sat in their cell for what seemed like ages. There was very little light, and they could hear nothing of what was going on in the castle around them. Even I worried about Goldenheart. Undoubtedly, the king had sent for her by now. She must be terrified. Even I cursed himself for not protecting her better. Suddenly, the one torch that dimly lit the chamber went out. The bears could hear shuffling and clinking, and then the cell door opened. Move and you die, a voice said. Both Even I and White Claw felt the cold tips of spears, and were then fit with shackles and blindfolds. Consider this your funeral march, a guard uttered. The rest of the king's guard laughed as they ushered the prisoners out of the cell. The bears didn't know where the king's guard was taking them, but even I thought he had a guess. Tales of Black Maw's challenges were told to all bears from a very young age, and there was only one place in the entire kingdom that could host such an event, the Mountain Arena. The king would want the entire kingdom to witness what he would expect to be the death of someone seeking the throne. Even I and White Claw could see nothing as they continued on the downward sloping path leading to their fate. Even I reasoned they must be in a tunnel leading away from the castle. He could hear nothing except for the pounding of feet. After roughly 20 minutes, the lead guard called for a halt, and Even I heard a door open. The tip of a spear prodded him through the opening. His shackles were removed, and then he heard a door close behind him. He was alone. Even I removed his blindfold and found himself in a large room bisected by steel bars. Just another cell, he thought. But as he turned to look around the cell, Even I found himself staring out at King Irontooth.
Why have you done this to yourself?
Irontooth asked.
You gave me no choice, Even I said. No good bear would have put that child back in hands that wished him harm. I did it to save the boy's life.
You lie, Irontooth sneered. No bear can care that much for a human. I am no idiot. You have organized this whole charade as a reason to take the crown for yourself. You and your friend White Claw seek power. That is all. Your motives are base, even I. I shall enjoy watching your death.
What do you know of my motives? Even I asked. I have lived my life watching the kingdom of bears hide from the world. That isolation has poisoned our minds, and it has clouded your judgment. Our antisocial behavior has made us enemies that are more powerful than we give credit.
I walked into that courtroom today in your service with the hope of saving a life of no less value than yours or mine. That child has done no injustice in this world, yet you condemn him. Why? Fear? Apathy? Neither is an acceptable reason. As I said, you have given me no choice.
You insult your own kind, even I, Iron-Tooth said. I think you forget what it is that you are.
What I am has no bearing on what is right, even I said.
It has everything to do with what is right, the king said. There is no escaping that. Your confused logic has damned you, even I. Damned you, your friend, and your wife.
What have you done with them?
Even I gripped the bars of his cell in sudden panic.
I've done nothing, and I will do nothing, Iron-Tooth said. Of course, White Claw will be removed from his position, but I will do nothing other than that. Your decisions will be punishment enough for them. Who will be there for your wife after your death, hmm? What bear would marry her and take on that shame? The same for White Claw, I imagine. Who knows? Maybe they will find comfort in each other's arms when you were gone.
King Iron-Tooth chuckled and turned to leave.
Oh, and as for the boy, his body shall burn upon the pyre of the Everflame for your disobedience.
The king left the room as even I seared with anger.
I shall not fail, even I thought. Nothing shall stop me. Nothing.
After a short time in his cell, a guard came and escorted Even Eye to the gate of the mountain arena. As Even Eye walked out onto the floor, he felt very strange. The seats were filled with the citizens of the kingdom, but every single bear in the audience was silent. It was so quiet that Even Eye could hear his heartbeat. Thousands of bears sat in one awkward silence. The truth was, they didn't dare make a sound. Who would cheer a bear who defied a king, and who would jeer a bear whose defiance may gain him the crown? This was history. This day was sacred. The bears knew how to give the moment the reverence it deserved. However, the silence angered King Iron-Tooth. He wanted the crowd to jeer Even Eye, but he did not let his anger show as he stood to address his kingdom.
One of you has chosen to challenge the authority of my rule. One of you has spoken the words of fate. That bear is Even Eye, who stands before you now.
Even I looked up to the king's box 50 feet above the arena floor. Hatred welled inside of him as he noticed two bears sitting just behind Iron-Tooth. He looked intently at them and saw his wife, Goldenheart, and his friend, White Claw. Guards with spears held them where they were, forcing them to watch the ritual. Even I's blood boiled in his veins, and he ground his teeth. King Iron-Tooth turned his gaze from the crowd to Even Eye.
Does the challenger have anything to say before the ritual begins?
Even Eye stood up on his hind legs and shouted up at King Iron-Tooth.
Tell my wife that I have given her my heart, and before the day is done I shall also give her the kingdom.
King Iron-Tooth curled his lips as he looked down upon Even Eye. His eyes were full of rage, but he wouldn't allow Even Eye's words to bait a response. He knew he must show his kingdom which bear held the steady hand.
Raise the gate!
Iron-Tooth shouted, and horns sounded throughout the arena. A gate opened at the edge of the arena, and 14 large bears dragged a massive wooden structure out onto the floor. It was shaped like a pyramid, but with a flat top and stairs built into one side. It stood at least 30 feet high, and even I couldn't see around it. The bears dragged the structure over to a large square board on the arena floor. Then they removed the board and pulled the pyramid to sit where it had been. Even I looked at the structure and wondered what it now covered. The king rose from his chair and again spoke to Even I.
At the top of this structure are four holes. Each opens to a mystery below. Each leads to a different fate. At the top is also a riddle, a clue as to which hole will complete the challenge successfully. You will have limited time to make your decision. A poor decision will result in death. Let the ritual begin.
Even I looked at the pyramid and wondered why King Iron-Tooth had not told him how long he had to accomplish the task. He guessed the riddle would explain that, and walked toward the pyramid. He looked at the bears surrounding it as he approached. They did not return his gaze, but simply stood without moving, like statues. Even I climbed the stairs, and as he reached the top, he looked out over the crowd. Some of the bears gasped, and some brought their paws to their mouths in shock. Looking back down the pyramid, even saw the 14 bears lighted on fire, and now understood his time limit. If he did not make his choice in time, he would be standing upon his own funeral pyre. He quickly found a scroll and read the riddle. Choices four lie before he who would seek the crown. To the right, a line of sight may direct your decision down. Your other side, should you decide to hear the kingdom call, place your fate in what you say and allow yourself to fall. Even I looked to his right and saw two holes in the top of the pyramid and another two to his left. The holes were large enough for him to fit through, but not by much. He looked down into each one and saw only blackness. Soon, he heard fire crackling on the sides of the pyramid. Calm down, even I thought. You can do this. He went back and reread the scroll. To the right, a line of sight may direct your decision down. Even I decided to start with the holes to his right. He walked between them and then looked to the crowd, letting the words echo in his head. Line of sight. Direct your decision down. He was sure he should be looking for a visual clue. Then even I noticed the banners of the kingdom's professional John Ball teams hung along the wall of the arena. Maybe the clue is in the banners, he thought. Even I looked at the team banners as he walked around the holes. He wasn't sure where he should align his sight, but an idea popped into his head to stand where the scroll was and then look toward the banners. Even I walked to that spot and looked out over the first hole. The team banner of the Flames lined up perfectly. That has to be a bad sign, he thought. Then he looked out over the other hole and saw the banner of the Fighting Fish. Fish were a positive sign, but fighting was confusing, so even I decided to try the holes on the other side. The temperature on the pyramid was rising, and he could see and smell smoke. Even I quickly reread the second part of the scroll. Should you decide to hear the kingdom call, place your fate in what you say and allow yourself to fall. Once again, even I let the words play in his mind. The first side referred to sight, and this side referred to sound, so he decided to see if he could hear anything in the holes. Even I bent low, hung his head over one of the holes, and listened. He could neither hear nor see anything. Then he tried the other one and got the same result. He recited the scroll in his mind again, and the words, "Place your fate in what you say," stood out. Maybe I need to say something into the right hole, even I thought. Maybe when I call out, something will present itself. He figured it was worth a shot and shouted into the first hole. Hello! Even I received no response, but he could tell from the echo that the hole was very deep. That hole must be so deep that the fall would kill me. He moved to the other hole. Hello! He called out again. No response. Yet this time there was no echo. The hole was shallow, maybe too shallow. He would not want to choose this hole only to find himself stuck in the middle of the burning pyramid. If only I could see, he thought. It was getting very hot, and the smoke now obscured his view of the crowd. The flames had reached the top of the platform, and his time was running short. Even I cursed, but then a grand idea came to him. He retrieved the scroll, tore a piece off, and then lit it with the fire. Rushing over to the shallow hole, even I dropped the burning paper in, and sure enough, the walls of the hole were already starting to smoke. This hole was a trap. Thinking the other hole too deep, even I lit another piece of the scroll and headed for the hole that lined up with the banner of the flames. Anticipating the outcome, even I backed away from the hole as he dropped in the burning piece of scroll. A jet of flame shot upward. It was another trap, although this did confirm his theory about the banners. The fire was closing in on him now. It seemed the hole that lined up with the Fighting Fish banner was the right choice. Fish were food. They were life. This had to be the right decision. Even I lowered himself into the hole, but then heard a large splash come from below. There was water down there, but he didn't know what was in it. He decided to drop the rest of the burning scroll to the bottom. As it hit the water, the surface became a thrashing frenzy. There was something very unfriendly down there. Even I reconsidered his decision. All that was left to explore was the deep hole. He spun and looked at it from across the platform. Flames were everywhere, and the smoke burned his eyes. Just then, a great cracking sound ripped the air, and the pyramid jolted. The flames were consuming it. I'm out of time, even I thought. He quickly resigned himself to his fate and dashed for the deep hole. As he ran to it, the pyramid buckled beneath him. Without a second thought, he launched himself into the hole and disappeared into the blackness. The crowd could see nothing. The pyramid had become a great bonfire, and everyone expected the worst. King Irontooth smiled from his high seat and turned to Goldenheart. Her face was wet with tears, though she made no sound. White Claw sat emotionless. Let this be a lesson to the both of you, Irontooth sneered. He turned back toward the crowd and inhaled the smell of smoke that had filled the air. He smiled and sighed in satisfaction, relishing the moment. He wanted to watch the pyramid until it became a pile of ash. As even I fell, he closed his eyes and braced for impact, but his body quickly came flush with the wall of the hole and changed the direction of his fall. Even I realized the hole didn't go straight down. He was sliding at an angle. Down into the darkness, even I slid until he eventually leveled out and skidded to a stop. He felt for the walls on either side of him and got to his feet. Walking in the opposite direction he had come from, it was not long before even I bumped into a staircase. He climbed it with pride as it became clear he had chosen the correct hole. After a minute, he found a flat surface above his head and pushed at it with his paw. It gave way, revealing itself as a trap door in the floor of the arena. Bears in the crowd pointed as they noticed even I push himself up from the trap door in the arena floor some 60 yards from the burning pyramid. As more of the crowd noticed, they cheered, no longer able to conceal their natural inclination to support the underdog. White Claw and Goldenheart cheered as well, but the guards raised their spears to the bears' throats, and they quickly fell silent. King Irontooth shook with rage, unable to speak. Even I ran across the arena floor until he was under the king's box and shouted at him. Irontooth, he called, tell my brother White Claw that he shall help me rule this kingdom so that my heart never becomes as poisoned as yours. King Irontooth shot out of his seat and bellowed into the smoky air. Begin the second challenge now! One bear came from the arena gate carrying a John Ball and motioned for Even Eye to follow. The arena floor had markings for playing John Ball, and Even Eye was led to the far end of the field. Your goal is the opposite end of the field, the bear said to Even Eye and gave him the ball. You must score only once. When you hear the horn sound, you may begin. Even Eye nodded, and the bear turned and left. Even I looked around and saw nothing in the arena other than the burning pile of wood that was once the pyramid. Yet he kept his senses sharp, as he knew any moment his obstacles would be presented to him, and they would most certainly be deadly. He waited with the ball, ready to run. The horn sounded, and a gate opened on the opposite side of the area. More gasps came from the crowd as 10 giant wolves barreled out of the gate, just as big as the ones Even Eye and White Claw had battled the previous night. Even Eye's wounds ached and his eyes narrowed. Despite his injuries, he had to fight better than he did last night, or it would cost him his life. Even Eye devised a quick plan. He dropped the John Ball and ran toward the fire. The ball would be no use to him unless he could kill all 10 wolves. Once he reached the perimeter of the blaze, he turned toward the charging wolves, stood on his hind legs, and roared. The pack did not slow, and Even I realized he would have to fight fast. As the first two wolves reached him, they leapt into the air, going straight for his throat. Even I anticipated their jump and fell to the ground just as the wolves overshot their mark and landed in the flames. The next two wolves were immediately behind them, and Even I used their momentum against them as well, slashing at the first wolf with his claw while sidestepping the other. His blow met the wolf under the chin and stunned it. The second wolf he had avoided tried to stop, but couldn't until it had skidded past Evenai. The bear kicked his back legs out and sent the wolf into the blaze. Now the wolf Evenai had stunned regained its composure and came back at him. With one mighty swipe, he knocked this wolf into the fire as well.
Four wolves down, six to go, Evenai thought.
The stench of burning flesh and hair afflicted Evenai and sent adrenaline coursing through his veins. He roared again at the pack, goading them to attack, but they had grown wary of the fire. So it was now Evenai's turn to go on the offensive. He dove upon the pack with reckless abandon. He took his claw and delivered an uppercut to the first wolf under the jaw, lifting it into the air. He slapped another wolf to the ground and stepped on its head, crushing its skull under his weight. A third wolf he impaled on his claw and threw it into the pack. Evenai took advantage of this small diversion and caught one of the wolf's hind legs in his teeth. Then he crunched down and broke the leg. The wolf fell to its side, and Evenai immediately lunged at its neck and killed it. There were now four wolves left, and all of them had got back on their feet, though one was severely wounded under the jaw. The wolves were afraid of Evenai and circled him, well out of his reach. Fortunately, Evenai had an idea of how to bait them in, though he knew it would take all of his strength. He rose up on his hind legs and roared toward the ceiling of the arena, taking his focus off of the wolves completely. At once, they took the bait and launched themselves at Evenai as he left himself exposed. The searing pain of fangs in his flesh was immediate. All four canines were upon him, hanging from his body. The weight was immense, but Evenai knew he had to remain upright. Slowly, he gained his balance and took a step toward the fire. Then another step, and another. The crowd stared in awe as Evenai took one final step toward the fire, then turned around and fell backward upon the burning wood. The two wolves on his back were crushed between his weight and the inferno. Their bodies went limp, and they relinquished their holds. Evenai rolled as soon as they did, bringing the same fate to the other two wolves. As fast as he could, he pushed himself off of them and backed away from the fire as they burned. Evenai was free of the blaze, but had to roll on the arena floor to smother fire that had caught on some of his fur. He had suffered burns, but they couldn't tamp his spirit. The wolves were dead, and he had won. He got up, staggered to the John Ball, and picked it up in his mouth. The crowd cheered Evenai onward as he limped all the way to his goal. Once he crossed the opponent's territory line, he dropped the ball and called out to King Irontooth.
Irontooth! Tell my kingdom to cheer louder, for my victory is their own.
King Irontooth stood from his chair and turned his back on the arena.
It is time I end this, he uttered through clenched teeth.
He began to leave his box, but stopped short and stared at Goldenheart and Whiteclaw. Then he turned to one of his guards.
When I have taken the life of that traitor, he said, kill these two.
Yes, sire, the guard answered.
The crowd continued to cheer Evenai, but as he stood on the floor of the arena, he felt his strength waning.
I shall not fail, he thought. Just one last challenge.
The horn sounded, and the gate reopened. This time, King Irontooth himself walked into the arena. The crowd quieted instantly, as if suddenly aware their cheers for Evenai had also been cheers against their ruler. King Irontooth was bigger than Evenai, and as he walked toward the wounded bear, the king's rage was evident. Evenai closed his eyes and pictured his wife. He loved her more than anything in the world. He would not let her life continue without him, having to bear his disgrace. He would not leave her with that burden. Evenai imagined his wife shunned from the kingdom, and a fire rose in his belly. He clenched his teeth, furrowed his brow, and opened his eyes. King Irontooth stood directly in front of him and unleashed his wrath. He swung and caught Evenai on the side of the head, knocking him to the ground. Irontooth followed with a blow to Evenai's ribs and then stepped hard on one of his legs. The pain was great, but Evenai rolled away from his assailant, narrowly dodging another blow to the head. Yet King Irontooth was undeterred. He pounced on Evenai, pinning him on his back, and rained blow after blow upon him. Even Eye's wounds had weakened him. His vision blurred as blood dripped into his eyes. Iron Tooth was in control. Even Eye was going to die. He could hear Goldenheart cry out from high above. Amid the deluge, Even Eye's mind drifted far beyond the arena, and he imagined his wife walking the roads of the kingdom without him. Bears along the side of the road assaulted her with slurs and pelted her with rotting food. White Claw wasn't far behind her, and children taunted him and stabbed at him with spears. Even Eye's wife and friend were being banished from the mountain, sent far from the light of the Everflame. They were being cast out of their home. Storm clouds formed in the sky of Even Eye's imagination, and lightning flashed in the distance. The Everflame burned atop Grey Mountain, and upon its pyre lay the body of a small boy.
No, Even Eye grunted.
He opened his eyes to see King Irontooth on top of him, afire with vengeance.
What did you say, you maggot? Irontooth growled. I said no.
Even Eye swung his arms up, sinking both his claws into the king's throat. Then he brought his hind legs up under Irontooth and pushed him off. Even Eye climbed atop the king and bent his mouth down to Irontooth's ear. Tell whatever it is that waits on the other side of death that my life has only just begun. And with those words, Even Eye tore Irontooth's throat out, defeating him and claiming the kingdom. He stood and unleashed a primal roar as his kingdom chanted his name.